Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm very excited. I have two people with me in person, and we each have our own microphone, which, believe it or not, this is the first podcast with three mics at once. So I have Alan Sanchez and Soren McVeigh here. Hey, you two.
Hi. Hi. Hello.
Hi. I'm absolutely honored to be on this third mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got so tired of having two people share a mic across from me that I just went on Amazon one day and went for it. So anyway, we all have our own mics. And these two wonderful people are responsible for the film Watcher. I'll give out the credits first, and then I'll talk about the awards. But Alan wrote and directed, and you're also one of the producers. There's three producers. And Soren is the lead actor and also credited as a producer. English is tough sometimes. So
day by day.
At the Sherman Oaks Film Festival just last year, 2022, in November 2022, it was an official selection for Short Film Horror, and it took home Outstanding Short Film Horror, Outstanding Screenplay Horror for Alan, and Outstanding Performance by an Individual in a Horror Short for Soren. So you each got your own award, and then the film itself got an award, and I'll add, I don't know if you guys read the emails thoroughly, but the Filmmakers Awards are chosen by a jury of your peers. It's people who had films at the festival previous years are the jury for that. So in a lot of ways, I think they're kind of the best awards.
I feel it. I mean, when I saw that, you know, when the list got posted, I looked it up and I was like, oh, I didn't win, you know, because it was an order. So I was like, oh man, okay, well, it was cool to get, you know, nominated, you know, just to be picked up. And then I just saw the Filmmakers. It's like, oh, snap. I got to text Soren.
That was the best and most surprising text message, Tracy. Yeah, let me tell
and,
you.
No, it's for it to be reviewed and, you know, loved by peers like, from the film festival, to me feels way more special than what would be judges, because it's just like it's fellow filmmakers acknowledge mm-hmm. the movies for what we did, and I think to me,
not to knock an award by judges, yeah, by all means, I would love awards from everybody, but I agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I tend to like that acknowledgement from my peers. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's such an honor to be picked up for screenplay and film, and of course, like obviously Soren for the lead. And I've been banking for Soren to win an award. I'm just like, let's give her somebody. She did such a good job in that movie.
Bless you, my child.
Well, absolutely. And very well deserved, because especially I remember talking to Soren at the mixer afterwards and being like, she's just so nice and personable. And the character you're playing, oh boy, like completely, I would have believed you were ex-military, you know.
Thank you. Thank
what
you
are you
so
going
to
do? I guess it's called acting.
Yeah, I mean, when I was writing this script originally, like Soren was my first choice for Sybil. I wrote that role specifically for Soren, just based on, you know, how many years I've known Soren and seen, you know, different projects that she's done, and kind of seeing her strengths and not weaknesses, but just her.
Oh, you can say weaknesses by all means.
So seeing her like what would be her strong points? I'm just like, okay, I think she would be great as like a Ripley type or, a Sarah Connor type. I think it'd be fun to write. But when I was developing it, when I first started writing this, the idea of Watcher, I knew Soren was going to be the lead, and it would be this strong former military female that has a really strong backstory. And I think I knew she would excel in that role. And I had utter confidence that I was like, I don't need her to read.
Excellent. I'm glad you didn't make her audition. But before we start talking about Watcher,
yeah,
and before I have you both talk about your personal histories and how you got into the crazy world of filmmaking and performance, I'm going to tell people that they can see the film maybe a couple ways. You're going to do by the time this podcast comes out, there will be an online release. So I'm sure you'll just give me a link and I can put it in the show notes, as they always say on podcasts. And then also there's a little thing called the Discover Indie Film TV series that was born out of this podcast. I don't know if Alan knows the story, but maybe Soren doesn't, which is I had so many filmmakers come on this podcast, and everyone who had a feature was like, I'm on streaming. And everyone who had a short was, I'm on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, let's I asked 20 filmmakers, do you want to put all your shorts together into a TV series and put it on Prime? And they said, sure. And so
who would say no?
Right. And so seasons that we got up to like 10,000 viewers a week. It was really sweet. And then Amazon said, oh, you're too popular. Let's make you charge. So now it's 99 cents an episode and $7.99 a season.
Thanks, Bezos.
And I am talking to the listener saying, you know what? $8 to see 25 plus short films made by people who made them out of their own pockets because out of passion. I think that's $8 well spent. So if you want to be nice, go to Amazon Prime Video, go to the Prime Video app on your smart TV, type in Discover Indie Film. It auto-completes pretty fast, actually. And just enjoy. There's 7 seasons up right now.
Oh, wow.
Season 8 is all dance films. If you like dance like I do, I am the least coordinated person alive, but I love dance and dance films. So I was invited to be a guest jury member on a dance film festival in England. And I said to that programmer, you want to do an all dance season of Discover Indie Film? God bless her. She said, yes. Thank you, Jenny Pill. And so season 8. So I imagine Watcher will be in season 9.
Yeah.
Which I think is set not till September. But if you want to see it before September, there's also a little sucker called TV High. And if you go to watchtvhigh.com, or if you go on any of the smart TV platforms, except Samsung's weird one, but those Roku jerks. TV, yeah, theirs is called Tizen, but Roku TV, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, or iPhone mobile and Android mobile, there is an app on all of them called TV High, TVHI, and the website is watchtvhigh.com. And yes, it is a streaming service and or smart TV app where everything is meant to be watched. They're wonderful indie films that are even better if you're stoned. That is a theory.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see your reaction to Watcher High.
Yeah. Please report back.
Yeah. Watcher is a cool, very well-made horror film. And before we started recording, I was telling Soren and Alan, I haven't watched Watcher High, but I'm looking forward to it because I think I'm going to see all kinds of things I didn't see before.
I think you're going to reach a sub-level,
yeah,
for
I can't wait to like get like a 5-paragraph email from you to be like, here's my prophecy of what I think this thing is.
You're going to be credited with a co-writer for the feature.
If I could, it would make my day. It would make my year if he went, oh, Jeff's stoned experiences. I'm going to add them into the feature script. It'll inspire a rewrite. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, that's how people can see Watcher. But before we even get to Watcher, I warned you both. I want to know your whole life story, where you grew up, what first got you into film, acting, TV, whatever it was, photography. So I suppose as the writer director,
okay,
we'll have Alan go first.
Yeah. So I literally was born and raised on film. My sister Sandy would literally babysit me, and she, I love her to death, but she is the worst babysitter you could have, or the best, depending on who you ask.
Love you, Sandy.
Yeah, I love you, Sandy. She would just literally just plop me down and put on movies, and.
And then go talk to her friends.
Talk to her boyfriend. Sorry, Sandy.
Twirling the telephone cord around her finger.
Yeah, in the 80s.
That's what most older siblings do. Yeah. Now it's an iPad, right?
Yeah, but yeah. Cordless. Yeah. So, she would just put movies in front of me. But the interesting thing is, you know, it wouldn't be like Disney movies. It wouldn't be, you know, NeverEnding Story or anything, which I would watch too. They would be horror movies. And I would be like 3 years old, 4 years old, just watching horror movies.
Three or four.
Yeah. And my first memory of a movie is A Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's the scene with Freddy and Tina in the alleyway, and he stretches his arms out and you just see it stretching. I just remember being so in awe of that, being like, what am I watching? As a kid, I wasn't like terrified. It was more like intrigued than anything. So I remember, I guess my mom saying like, as a kid, I would jump, but I wouldn't be afraid. I'd be more of like intrigued by, because she would always tell me it's not real, it's fake, you know, it's a magic trick. And so every time I would see a kill scene or a death scene, it'd just be like, how did they do that? You know, how? They're okay? Okay, cool. And I'd be excited about seeing, like, the next kill because I'm, like, always curious to see how they did it. And so, like, it just, that intrigue just would always happen. And then it just grew even more because my dad would always take me to the movies weekly from, like, when I was in kindergarten up. So I would just go see a new movie every single week. And it, I guess it just stuck on me. And from there, I started writing at the age of 8. I started writing my own little, like, Goosebumps style books. I wouldn't have a typewriter. I just literally fold paper and write with my bad chicken scratch writing little chapters of these bad stories. I think they're, one of them was called Scorpion. It was just literally about an overgrown scorpion that was in Texas. And it...
You're halfway to a movie right there. Yeah. Actually, a giant scorpion overgrown.
Yeah. And
make some calls.
Yeah, I heard there's a couple movies like about giant lizards or giant gorillas. So.
The Meg.
Yeah. The Meg, yeah, it was like
a giant shark. Yeah.
I just remember drawing the cover and it just be this guy that was like this military guy that was impaled by the stinger and like the venom's just coming out of his mouth. I drew that. Yeah.
That's extra cool.
Yeah, as a kid.
Make some calls. Someone, Jesus.
Yeah, as a kid, like, and I got in trouble in school, you know, because of that. And you're like, he's drawing violent stuff. My mom's like, he's fine. He just likes scary stuff, and it's what he writes. He's not a psychopath yet.
Well, it kind of backs up. You already have me thinking of the theory that, like, you just saw it as magical and creative, and you applied your creativity to it, and it may have even given you an outlet. Like, it doesn't cause violence, this stuff.
Yeah, it's more of, like, being creative, and I think that's one of the things that I noticed as I grew up. A lot of my friends started to lose was their imagination or their creative side. You know, when they'd grow up, they'd, you know, be into high school stings, you know, picking up chicks. And I'd be like this nerdy little kid, like, I'm thinking about stories and all that stuff. But it just was something that stuck on me. It just never left. Even to now, I still have like just visions in my head of just a random shot. And it just stick with me. Like, what is that shot? And it'd grow. And it just become what would become the story that I write. But no, from there, like, I went for high school. I became the first, filmmaker with a letterman at that high school because it was, like, the first ever film program that they ever had because it was a new high school. I was able to go move over to college. And
so high school was your first chance working with cameras?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was back in 2004, 2005, like my senior year, I got to work with like editing even before it became digital. Like when it started becoming digital, like, but it was like the infancy of it where you would actually take tape, it record it into the computer and then you'd edit. And that was right before we would have like, you know, memory cards just to drop in and go. Like that's how I started. And that kind of got me a leg up for college. So when I got there, I already knew editing. So I'm
holding up my hand to interrupt. So you didn't tell me where you grew up.
Oh yeah. I grew up in San Bernardino, California.
Excellent.
Yeah. The high school I went to was Arroyo Valley High School, home of the Hawks, I believe. Like, it's been a while. They might've changed it. I grew up in San Bernardino and
right. Just east of LA.
Yeah, in the hood, you know. I was the rare nerdy kid that didn't get bothered by the cholos because my brother was in a gang and they'd be like, don't mess with him. He's cool. He's just a nerdy kid.
Gotcha. So he covered for you. That's great.
Yeah, he vouched for me. And yeah, they'd be like, you know, the more like just see me with my little rocker jacket. They're like, are you a rocker? I'm like, yeah, sure. He's cool. Just let him pass by. Don't rob him. He's fine.
Excellent. And then what college did you choose?
I ended up going to community college first, obviously, because, again, growing up in poverty, but, again, we're in the lower end of financials. So I kind of had to make a choice of where I wanted to go. So I chose community college because I was able to get grants and all that stuff to get started. So I started there. Luckily, they had a film program in San Bernardino Valley College. And that program's amazing. I kind of had to play dumb for a second because all the stuff that I was taught in high school was their beginner stuff. So I was like, oh, yeah. And then I'd just be typing and playing like I don't know how to edit. And I just edit in 30 minutes, like just be done with homework super quick. I'm like, cool, this is easy. Time out. But they have like a great, like, a director's program there with acting and directing. And that's where I kind of got my foot into playing with more directing and all, you know, doing the exercises that they have, and I was able to start flexing that muscle, even though I did a few things before, like, in high school, you know, doing skits and little short films, I didn't really get a chance to fully direct, and I wanted to direct, and that's where I started developing there. And yeah, eventually I graduated with an AA there for, they pushed me, I wanted to do film, but they made me do TV production, which is just kind of the same thing. It's just different classes, but they do the same thing. And then I ended up going to see Cal State Northridge, and was able to get a grant and took out a loan to live by myself, because by that time I was already in like my mid-20s. I'm like, I am not going to be dorming with like an 8-year-old kid, be like, hey, you want to buy some beer? Can you buy some beer?
Oh, they would have wanted to.
They would have been bothering, like thinking like we're going to be buddies with this guy. Like, oh yeah.
CSUN, Cal State Northridge, the locals, we call it CSUN, has a really good film program.
They do. And I was able to get into that program. I went into their TV program because they're so selective on their film program. I think they only choose like 40 people a year, which is hard, even when I was already in on a provisionary. So I kind of like switched over to TV production just to stay at CSUN, because it was such a good program. Again, similar classes, but just, you know, different paths. But yeah, I ended up getting my own place there, living there for 2 years and graduating with a BA. And yeah, then luckily I was able to get a few gigs here and there. And then from there, I started just making my own independent productions with a couple short films. And yeah, and ended up being one of them, ended up being Watcher.
And the whole time you've always been creatively driven. And I assume you were the type who was... You were continuing to write your stories and things the whole way?
Yeah, I would always have just random ideas. Just I would either just draw stuff, like pretty much what would be in my head. Like either it'd be like a frame of something, just a shot. I would just draw it. Like, for example, I had a short that I did a couple years ago called Banshee Avalon. And it literally the first thing I had in my brain was a shot of a girl staring out from a vast mountain cliffside
vista,
and that ended up being the first shot of the film. And that was just the first thing I saw. I drew it, and then I ended up starting to write it out, and it became what it was my first official short film was that. And then Watcher kind of did the same thing too, which is the shot of a tree, and which is like the center of the shot, and then we kind of push in, and I didn't know what that was, and it became the first shot of the film. So it always just starts off like a weird thing that pops up in my head, and I just kind of fill in the blanks from there.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that you went from story writing to being enthusiastic about directing, because it sounded like your story writing was always very visual.
Yeah.
Including like drawing things in addition to it, which, hey, you were storyboarding.
Yeah, like it would be like just little fan ideas, and yeah, it was kind of building myself to storyboard. And It's interesting because like I'm also more of a music writer, not a music writer, but it's just more like I tend to make playlists before I start to write, because it gives me a tone. I get a feeling when I look at this visual, and I try to find a playlist that kind of gives that feeling, which builds up the tone. So with every project that I do, there's always a playlist, and Watcher has like a playlist with nothing but like tense music that builds up of like, you know, from The Conjuring or something.
I was about to say, okay, before I jump to Soren, because yeah, I'm really ready to jump to Soren. Oh, yeah. But I was going to say, I have a feeling that a lot of your playlists are mostly soundtracks from other films. Like, you seem like inspired. I would assume you're inspired by soundtracks.
Yeah, there's soundtracks, and then or they'd be just be random songs that would fit the tone for the music. Like with Watcher, it'd be like music from films, from soundtracks. But like my other short, Banshee Avalon, was actual music that was like folk music that fit like this, what would this girl listen to on her playlist. And I would just have the tone from there.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. We hit a good point. You already mentioned Watcher. Yeah. We can jump over to Soren's life story.
Hello.
Good to meet you again.
So nice to meet you. I am from Santa Cruz, California. So a teeny little surf town, about an hour and a half south of San Francisco. I grew up in the woods, so up in the mountains surrounding Santa Cruz. And I joke that I grew up in a tree on the side of a mountain. But we lived up this canyon with this teeny but sprawling community, kind of hippie community. And kind of similar, but also kind of the opposite. We didn't have TV. We had a television, but we didn't have cable. And so I saw tons of films that were my mom's favorite films just on repeat. So I know all of the dialogue to so many films from like the 70s and 80s that I'll see a random scene of it and realize that I remember the exact like cadence in which an actor delivers their lines. Is just, you know, can't do math, but I can recite A Fish Called Wanda by heart.
And so. It was mom's VHS collection?
Yeah, it was VHS collection. We had a little movie rental store down in Felton, our teeny little town. And we just rented all the same movies, and I just watched tons and tons of movies. It's so interesting because I miss a lot of cultural references from my own era, because I grew up in the 90s, but I didn't watch TV at all. To this day, I am mesmerized by like a Clorox commercial. I cannot pay attention to anything else if there is a TV on in the room. It wasn't until maybe sixth or seventh grade when I was at friends' houses and I'd finally get to watch TV there that I finally got SpongeBob and Friends and The Nanny. I loved The Nanny. So we got, I think, I don't know who spearheaded this, but I started acting very young, and we had a little improv troupe with our neighbor kids, and we would put on shows and we'd drag our parents on stage. I'm sure they weren't happy about it, but I always found myself in some sort of production. And I went to a small, very arts heavy school, and we did plays every year. And I think I was one of the few kids who really enjoyed acting, and so they'd just give me the big roles, and it was a real reality check when I realized that I was getting them just by default. It wasn't necessarily because I was the best, but I started doing community theater when I was around 10 or 11, and I played Peter Pan. And then I would do shows every summer through community theater and then keep doing plays in school. And then when I graduated high school, I wanted to study something else. I'd applied to colleges to study something completely different. Didn't get into them. Test scores weren't great. And ended up going to community college as well. I went to Cabrillo Community College, which has a really, really amazing theater program. They received a grant, like a massive grant, right before I got there. So I got to be in their inaugural production in this beautiful new state-of-the-art facility. And when I started going to community college, I just felt kind of directionless. I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And at a low point, decided to sign up for an acting class. And the second that I got into a theater, I was like, oh, this has continuously, since I was so little, been the thing that makes me happy. And I immediately made a whole new bunch of friends and just felt like I'd finally figured out what I wanted to be doing. And then I had the talk that every actor is terrified to have with their parents, where they go, "Mom, Dad, I want to be an actor," and they both went, "Duh." My dad has erased my actual high school graduation from his mind, and he has said multiple times that it was announced when I graduated high school that I was going to be studying theater and acting. So I guess it just always made sense for them. Took me a little longer. And then I transferred from, well, I stayed at Cabrillo for a while because I also started working for their professional musical theater company that's in residence in rep every summer and winter. And I worked on the technical side of it. I was a properties master and I was an assistant stage manager. So I always joke that because I did both those jobs for the same productions, I'd spend my whole day building things and I'd spend my whole night watching them get broken. And then I'd come back the next day and I'd spend my whole day fixing them. And the cycle went on and on. But when I finally got all my ducks in a row and transferred, I went to UC Santa Barbara. And it was... It's a stunning school and has a really, really wonderful BFA program for acting, their acting emphasis.
It's my alma mater, too.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
Go Gauchos.
I'm a Gaucho. Who knew? I don't think I say that often on this podcast, but yeah, that's my school.
Giant world, but tiny town.
Keep going.
Or giant town, tiny world. yeah, so that was a 3-year program. I had so many incredible instructors. I did try to do a minor in design and then sort of at the 11th hour had a very tough conversation with my mentor in the design side. Shout out Vicky. I love you so much. Just saying something's going to suffer. I can't give my all to both directions. And she went, okay, well, you came here specifically for this reason. So you got to finish out with your BFA. And I'm, you know, so grateful that someone picked me up and set me down on the course and had me keep going because I was just paralyzed by it. Graduated with a BFA in 2015 and then moved down to LA. And within that first year or two was when I met Alan on a production where you were writing and... Well, you had been a writer, but it was no longer.
I got
your script. Yeah. it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. I got asked to write a rewrite, and the director had a breakdown, mental breakdown, because they weren't able to figure it out how to write to make the character stronger. So, I wrote this draft and ended up being in the table redraft and. I think it was well received, but ultimately I was just a DP and they found out that I wrote. Mm-hmm. So the people on my team were like, quickly rewrite this, please. It's for a thesis, for one of the schools. I won't say which one, you know, but, it was a thesis, but yeah, I ended up writing this rewrite and that's how I ended up, you know, Soren got casted as the lead of that project. And that's where we met on set because we didn't really interact, I think, during the table read. You were more like working with the director because that's what we do.
I'll be quite honest. I've blocked a lot of the memories of that.
So you'll
have to refresh my memory. Yeah,
we met, like working with a clueless director, huh?
We met on set and we were both miserable, I think, as we both...
For some of the same and then some very different reasons. It was a bizarre collection of people.
Yeah.
There were some really cool people and then there were some where you're like, did someone just write you?
I just remember...
How are you real? How have you made it to this point in your life acting the way that you do? It was extraordinary. It's a scene study. Honestly, I pull from that all the time when I'm trying to play someone who's insufferable.
Yeah, I remember our first interaction was you were sitting... I was setting up the shots. I didn't really talk with you yet, but I just remember...
I'm so intimidating.
You were sitting... No, I wasn't even intimidated, but I was just so busy not trying to kill somebody.
He's very important.
But Soren was sitting on a bed and I think it was in your room in the scene and we're in between shots and the director leaves and goes off to go do something. I can't remember, but I remember the sound guy that we got, I won't say his name, but he kept trying to hit on you. And
see, like I said, I have blocked out.
I remember getting so peeved by that. Because my one rule is I tend to be so respectful as much as I can on set. And this guy was the most unprofessional douchebag I've ever seen. And I'm just like, this motherfucker. And so he, like, and I remember just Soren just being nice and be like, just brushing off. And I remember he walks off and I think I remember doing like a snarky comment and you laughed at that snarky comment. I think that's when we just started like slowly socializing at that moment. That we both hated this set.
Bonded in trauma.
Yeah. And you could tell he was an ally, obviously. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, I didn't be like, hey, what's up?
Thank you. Very much.
Yeah. Sometimes I get myself in trouble with sarcasm. But yeah, sometimes we can jokingly make women think we're nice guys by putting down the assholes. But anyway.
Right, oh, yeah. But also the term nice guy at this point is the term for the guys who defend completely ridiculous actions by saying, but I'm a nice guy. So just so you know, fun fact of the day, the term nice guy is now.
Oh, nice guy's no good.
Nice guy, no good.
No yeah. good.
That's
no good,
why I nice go, guy. That's why I go with cool guy.
Cool guy.
Cool guy.
The cool guy is in.
So the cool guy was the DP.
Yeah.
Sound guy was a douche.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or a jerk.
Yeah. And I remember watching.
Like douche canoe.
Watching the cut of the thing, and it was just so butchered. But I just remember, because I'm an editor too, and I just remember being so mad at like the whole thing, and just remember seeing the dailies of Soren being like, and everybody in that thing, they're so good. It's just things, as you know, with what after you finish shooting, you think you have something good, but something like bad editing can ruin it easily. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a good pilot in there somewhere. but I knew Soren was really good, and I knew like I wanted to work with Soren in a different capacity down the road. So like we kept in touch, mm-hmm. and you know, we added each other on social media, and I think a few months after like I graduated, we had lunch and we just caught up, and we realized we're good buds.
Yeah, it worked out great. And then he originally, the short that he mentioned, Banshee Avalon, which we shot a few years ago, originally I had a larger role in it, and then the role had to be cut down to something small. And so what Alan always says is the role of Sybil is payback, because he wrote a role that he couldn't cut so that I would finally get to be in a movie. And what you were saying earlier, and then we backtracked, where you were saying that, you know, you had always thought of me for the role, and you thought I could play this tough ex-military commander type, is just so cool, because you can't see my face on this thing, but I go out for like mom, nurse. I just have like a Midwestern face that people just want to ask for directions all the time. So I don't scream military all the time. So it was just so cool that you were like, no, absolutely, Soren's the one. It was such an honor.
Yeah.
So thank you again.
Yeah. I mean, it's just more like I see, even me just hanging out with you, just, you know, when we talk and your honesty, like I was like, oh, you know, you give brutal honesty, which is one of the things I love about you as a person. And especially when it comes to my writing, you're honest about it. You have good questions. It's not just be like, this is a great draft. But Soren always did that bluntness. But then I would always see when you put your foot down on things. And that's when I would see, I was like, no, Soren is not just a nice person. Soren is also a strong person. And I think it'd be fun to have Soren play this character, which it's not on our reel yet. And I think it'd be great.
Well, now my reel is spectacular. My first shot is from Watcher, and I come out looking like a badass. I have to retake my headshots to match my reel. Because my headshots, I look like a kindergarten teacher.
And to me, like, Soren has that feel, again, of early, in my opinion, I don't know if like casting directors see it, which they should. It's like they have, to me, it's like early Sigourney Weaver, again, just that strong female type where like it's an everyday woman. It doesn't have to be like this glamorous, you know, life. It's like, no, it's like it's the everyday woman, and this badass and beautiful and cool and just all around.
Thank you for inviting me on this podcast so I could just get complimented for 40 minutes. That's really nice of you, Jeff. I really appreciate it.
I'm a cool guy.
Honestly, everyone gets complimented except the person who's unnamed who made the unbearable pilot. But mm-hmm.
if those circumstances hadn't risen then we wouldn't be here. So thank God for some people not doing their jobs right.
For sure. And it's funny because I had questions about another thing that I'm not going to ask because we should leave that other thing that you met on in the past.
Oh, yeah. No
need. And just focus on this. But, I mean, it makes sense to me what you saw and what you picked up on. Because even, you know, I'm sure I've seen, you know, things about Alien, since you mentioned Ripley and Sigourney more than once.
Yeah.
Where, you know, she would have never been cast that way until that film. Like, she could have spent a lifetime playing, you know, girlfriends and wives and waitresses. Like. That was such a unique opportunity, and someone saw that she could be the strongest person on that crew. And it's just so cool that you saw the same thing, and you prove it, because, like I said, not completely sarcastically, that I was really I was quite convinced by the performance.
Thank you.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
As was our jury of former filmmakers.
Yeah, I mean, the character Sybil is just, again, it's just more of like how I was developed as a writer. To me, like, a good female, strong female character has to have a good backstory. It's like, and it's not just like, oh, I am badass. What about you is badass? And I think,
yeah, what circumstances have led you to be the person that you are today?
Yeah, and I think, like, it's rare. I go by, like, what I've seen as a young kid. It's just like there's been inclusivity in some capacity, but it has, like, the right director's done it. James Cameron's done it. You know, he's written to Sarah Connor and my brain had a brain fart.
But he's written toughness. But I think Soren's character in Watcher is a leader.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that Cameron really makes women leaders as much as they're just sort of solo tough humans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're not leading a crew of people. There's always a dude who's the captain.
Yeah. And I took that aspect of how do I take this leader, but how, like, instead of it just being like this stereotypical military type, what would cause this interesting backstory of this character? Why is this leader here when this person is probably honorable? Why would she be there? And so I had to conceptualize this story of, like, this sister story of she's doing it for her sister. The one thing that she's held up, which was her military background, has failed her. And she has to do this insane, terrible thing, but she's doing it for the right reasons, while everybody else in that team is doing it for personal reasons, personal gain. She's the only person that has
personal, but it's not selfish.
It's not selfish.
Right.
Yeah. Like, everybody else is kind of, you're very selfish, you know?
And you wrote Watcher with the idea of it being a short that could be expanded to a feature, or is it after you finished the short did you think, I would like to expand this?
I wanted it to be a feature. It's just, again, I'm... As every indie filmmaker goes through the line, it's like, I can't afford that.
No, and it's not two people in an apartment having a conversation for 90 minutes. So,
yeah.
So it's not...
Just the opposite of that.
Sometimes people make wonderful indie features about that, but yeah, that's not what you're writing.
Yeah, and to me, I wanted to just get the best part of the story condensed down into a... Originally, my brain was going to be 15 minutes, but it's now 20 minutes short. But I wanted it to be to get the feeling of what I wanted the feature to be, which is this roller coaster ride where it slingshots. It builds, like, you pull that slingshot and it's like kind of like a roller coaster. You're going up to that thing. But when it drops, it doesn't stop till the very end of the film. And so I wanted that what the short to be, where it just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And then when shit hits the fan, it just goes so quick, like, just bodies are just going down, down, down. So, like, what's happening? It's just so fast paced. But again, it's the adrenaline I just want to give the audience, and that's when I wanted to go with the short, to just give the feel of what the feature would be. So if people did like the short, we'd be able to, you know, be like, and also give them some questions about the feature. Like, there's some unanswered questions in the short that we definitely do have answers for the feature. And it just leaves intrigue and then also give them that adrenaline rush of what a roller coaster ride would be in 20 minutes. And that was my goal, was to give that slingshot moment to the audience and give them intrigue before what the concept is and have it stick out more than the typical horror movies that kind of been out. Like, I needed a way in. And so that's with the invisible thing that we do, which is completely naked to the eye. That was the most intriguing part for me to do, to give that audience, was the challenge of something invisible and make it a roller coaster.
And the coming together of it was, cause Soren is listed as actually two of your actors are producers on it. How did that, did you just show her the script and say, "Hey, I would love you to be involved." And it sort of grew into, well, I need help getting the, like, cause obviously I appreciate that you had some help producing, because Lord knows it's a lot of hats to wear.
I mean,
yeah,
it was pretty much a one man show for,
unfortunately,
production wise for Alan. I was thinking about it the other day, thinking about coming on here, and it was just, it was already so impressive that the film is so good, but knowing the film, the process of production, every single thing that happened, it led back to Alan made it happen. Our food was Alan. Our location was Alan. Our housing was Alan. We didn't have anybody else but this poor guy who's created, conceived, wrote, directed, birthed this whole thing. And then on top of it, he's wrangling the entire production team and cast and our Airbnb and our car rentals. And it was just, we had some key elements drop out at the beginning. And fortunately, the huge, huge props to our whole crew. Everyone was incredible. Our DP was phenomenal. He came in like halfway through our rehearsal process and just immediately understood what Alan was trying to do and was so involved and just cared so deeply. And that's obviously, you can make magic if you just have people that care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you only have a dollar, like you're gonna make something really beautiful. But yeah, it was a skeleton crew for sure.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest challenges in the beginning. Soren was my first point of contact with. When I first finished first draft, I went straight to Soren because I really just wanted to see Soren's reaction, to see if she wanted to pursue this as, you know, as a lead. And I sent Soren the draft, and, you know, I think literally less than 3 hours later, just got a text back like, "Holy fucking shit."
That sounds like me.
That's a good 3-word review. Yeah.
I was like, okay, cool.
Okay, cool. And then from there, cut, print, moving on.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I think this is going to be the next thing I do. And then I think I was telling you early on, I was like, I think I'm just going to focus on directing and editing this time around. Because the last short, Banshee, I did everything. And by everything, I DP'd. I did everything. I was so burnt out and financially strapped. I was like, I think I'm going to try to get a producer. Luckily, we got some eyes from the Banshee Avalon. So I think we might be able to network somebody that might be able to help us to get this thing off the ground. And we got a few producers, but unfortunately, you know, we lost them early on. Not in a review of the bad blood, but it's just more like they just couldn't see the budget working out with what I was intending for. I was like, I think we're going to do this for $30K. They're like, I think that's not going to work at all with what you're trying to accomplish. And my indie filmmaker said, is like, I disagree. I think we can do this. I think we can just think outside the box. Be like, to me, it's all about honesty. Tell whoever's going to jump on this project that here's what we have. Everybody's going to get paid the same. And pretty much the extra money that we're going to have is going to be used to get resources to what you want for. So everybody will get what they want. They'll be happy with what they get. And it's not going to be that many cuts. It's just more like we're price cutting the rates, but we're paying everybody equally. It's not going to be like, somebody gets paid less than this. No, everybody got paid the same on the set. And it wasn't like a low rate. It was actually a decent rate. And also, and we were able, I was able to kind of budget that. And unfortunately, again, that was the bummer side. It was just, I had to take in the producer side of that film and, you know, figure it out. And luckily I have a relationship with, you know, the Inland Empire Film Commission, and they remembered me. And so they were able to hook me up with the sets and get locations for, you know, dirt cheap that were off season because we were shooting in the fall. So like we were able to get like a campsite completely to ourselves for, you know, reasonable rate. And yeah, I kind of had to step up from there as a producer and lock in everything. And I'm still surprised to this day that I survived. I think by seeing the gray hairs on my beard, I think that was the cost, but you know, I didn't have it at that time, but I do. So
it's a nice salt and pepper beard when you grow it out though. So
yeah, when I'm a baby face, I'm trying to hide that age, man.
I gave up long ago. I don't think I have much pepper left, but yeah. But I hear you. But you know, you're suffering for the art, right? It's the passion. Like if you didn't have the drive and passion to need to do it, you would have done something else. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I mean, I get it. It you put yourself through hell, but it's also for what you love.
Yeah, and what was cool about it too was that it didn't feel small. Like, even though we had a skeleton crew, we had some really talented individuals involved with it from, like Soren said, our DP, who's done music videos for, like, these really good artists. But the biggest one to me, I still don't know how I got this. Kenneth Calhoun, which is our special effects artist. How we got him is the weirdest thing. Because Kenny is a friend of Gracie, who plays Zero in the movie. Gracie, I guess, let him know that I was working on a film because apparently he saw Banshee Avalon and he loved it. And so he's like, oh, what is he working on now? And Grace is like, well, he's working on a horror movie. And he goes, stop. Get me linked up with him. And so we got linked up. And from there, I was like, cool. Like I saw his Instagram, and then I was like, we messaged each other in the DMs, and I was like, dude, can I see your resume, or like, you know, just to get a feel of it? And he sends me his resume. He goes, yeah, sure. See his resume. I'm like, oh god, I see Avengers Endgame, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Shape of Water, Jurassic World, The Mandalorian. I'm just like, what the fuck? He sounds expensive. But yeah, he asked for the script, and we hit it off really well. We're both horror geeks. And I sent him the script, and we planned a Zoom meeting, and that whole day I was just was ready to vomit because I had no idea how to pitch this guy, like the budget that we had and what we're going to do and how we're going to achieve this. And I just remember going into the Zoom with him, and he stops me within 5 minutes. He goes, dude, you don't have to sell me on this. I'm in. As soon as I read the script, looked over to my significant other and said, I got to do this. And he did. And he did it in such a record time too. Like the work that he did, he flew in, I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks before we started shooting from Europe. He got done doing Hellraiser, the remake.
And he wasn't allowed to tell us.
Yeah. He wasn't allowed to tell us at the time. He was just like, oh, I'm back from Europe. He goes, definitely start work. And he nailed it. Like, he did all the sculpting and all the effects and plotted everything on set, and he was ready to go. And I just don't know how he got that guy, but he did such an amazing job and still a good friend of mine. And I'm like, oh, just so proud that
he's the best.
Yeah.
We love you, Kenny.
Yeah. It's just insane that we had this small crew. They're just all super talented and came from like really big backgrounds that they were able to say yes to this concept.
And it's a wonderful story that an artist who makes huge money on the huge films in his personal time devotes himself to a film that he actually really cares about.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously working on your film must have been so rewarding for him because he's making it for someone who's making a film out of his own pocket. Like driving himself crazy. Like he knows, I'm sure he's well aware of the huge solid he did for you.
Yeah.
But but you're giving him the solid of getting to do a passion project again. Cause you know, I think we all know that Endgame and Hellraiser remakes and stuff. They're wonderful work, but it's not like a personal devoted thing. It's a corporate maximization of IP.
Yeah, and I think what intrigued him with the idea of Watcher was the kills. And, you know, the challenge of how do we do these kills with that are invisible, like invisible weapons penetrating through certain body parts, and how to do it without, you know, telling the audience explicitly to like this is like an invisible silhouette. How do we do it to the naked eye? And I think that's what caught him.
Well, also your extraordinary writing for your descriptors in the script, because when you mention, you know, Ryder's death and you're talking about a cheese pull when his skin getting like, pulled up from it. Like, it's just, it was so visual. It's just so well written.
I like writing gross shit. It got him excited, I think, in terms of like, and he saw the influences when we talked about it. He goes, oh, you're influenced by The Thing and the practicality of The Thing. Let's do it. Let's do this old school stuff and figure out these crazy ideas. Yeah, all
practical effects.
Yeah.
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 Which is very cool at this level.
Yeah, it was insane how we pulled it off. Like, I always, even when we did, like, one of the kill scenes for, I think, Zero, when her eye gets blown out open, and there's this bit where, like, the first take that we did, he overcompensated in the best way possible. Like, he's just like, okay, I'm gonna put so much blood in the first take, we'll do it. And then we did it, and just the first explosion just looked like a Kill Bill splatter of blood, just very anime, over the top, and my jaw was dropped, my DP's jaw. He literally stopped filming and just peeked over the camera and just like, what the fuck? it was the coolest thing. But yeah, at that level, was to have, like, you know, such a skilled person in an indie project was just amazing. It was really cool just to have like my small project get elevated to the next level from somebody that saw the potential, you know, and gave the solid. And I am forever in debt with that dude.
and Gracie Lacey, who you had mentioned playing Zero, another wonderful performance in the film.
Amazing.
So memorable. And actually, you might be a little sexist because your female characters are significantly more memorable than your male characters, I think.
Well, I think Ryder's cool, too.
Ace is funny.
He's funny.
He's so great.
But, like, if you wanted me to name people, like, I remember.
Zero, yeah. Yeah, Zero was, like, I again, like...
Like, the guys I remember their kills, to be honest.
They have good kills. This
good kills.
Zero, Gracie. Gracie was another person that I've worked with before on a different project called Banshee Avalon. And they were such an amazing actor that I really want to work with them again and in some capacity. And
they're the one who brought in this amazing...
Kenny, yeah. Yeah. And they brought in Kenny. And Gracie's... Wait,
Kenny's last name?
Oh, Kenneth Calhoun. Yeah.
I think you said it before.
Yeah.
Might as well say it again. I'm sure people would want to Google Calhoun.
Yeah. Look up Kenny Calhoun. He goes by Kenny, but you can also look up Kenneth Calhoun. But Gracie is one of the most nicest human beings you ever meet. They've been such a support. It's like a little sibling to me, practically. We became really close, but... I knew what's funny is that the original idea of Watcher, Zero, wasn't even in the picture. Like, it's like I was just looking, I wanted to bring Gracie in some capacity, but I just didn't know what. And either it was either going to be a cameo, like as a news reporter or something, just didn't know what. And then I realized when I was developing it, I never had a driver. In the heist crew. Like, so, like, either Ace was going to be driving shot up or something, I don't know. And I was like, oh, you know what? It'd be cool to have this driver that's very mysterious. And in design, in Zero's design, I kind of had it be like, okay, she has this makeup that covers her eyes, but there's a story to it. And the audience doesn't know, but I know that she covers her eyes, but she has a mask, like a bandana that she covers her whole face. So her whole face is blacked out when she's driving, so nobody could tell who it is. When they're, you know, going through this heist or whatever heist they're doing. So, yeah, it's just this cool design that I, you know, thought about. And I was like, okay, well, I really want this hardened character that's closed off, but also kind of has this vulnerability of like wants to open up, but is closed up by something we don't know yet. The audience doesn't know, but it, Zero's kind of inspired by Vasquez and Aliens. It's this hardened, characters, this badass that can stand up, even though they're tiny, they'll stand up ready to go to even the biggest boys like Ryder, you know, who's this experienced dude, doesn't give a shit. She doesn't give a shit. She'll push him and be like, what the fuck? You want to talk shit? Let's go. But yeah, I tend to like, I wanted to create a, like a balance of like two guys, two girls in the team, and they're both equal. They're all equals. They're not, you know, lesser or, you know, dominant. Like even Ryder and Sybil have this respect for each other. They look at each other, and because you could tell there's history, like, you know, they're in one of the discussions and on the bonfire, you could see that Ryder gives a look to Sybil when she starts to open up, and he's just like, oh, you're really gonna open up? And there's like little subtle things like that. It's just there's a level of respect with all of them, instead of being like, oh, you're a girl, is, you know what I mean, the typical line, like, whatever, girl. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they see each other as equals, but they'll get down each other's throats if they want to, and they'll give a shit.
For sure. And most of what you're talking about, I think, is why audiences respond to it. And audiences include award juries. But but in that, it's so clear watching the film that it's part of a bigger world and part of bigger ideas. And all the things you're mentioning that you say, I know, but I don't put it in the short. I think it's clear that, I mean, obviously, besides the story of the monster itself, is clearly a bigger story. But I think because you create so many questions and give us this impression of the larger world that you're building, I think that's why you've had such a great festival run.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the intrigue with the monster is, or with the Watcher, is that at the moment when I was doing the short, I was like, I kind of want to make it very minimal, and it gives the audience the scare of less is more. The less you know about it, the more scary it's going to be. And if I give it an exposition of like, I could have done the whole typical bonfire thing where they're like, oh, in these woods stands a thing, you know, this haunted grounds or whatever the shit.
The cheesy shit we've heard a thousand times.
Yeah. And I completely fought against that. And I was just like, I want them to, instead of doing that, let's develop the characters and do the Wes Craven rule where you develop the characters first and then you put them in danger. Like, instead of it being like a Friday 13th movie, which I love, I'm not going to diss them. Like, it's just more like, instead of it being teenage body bags, you actually have a character in danger. And so instead of them giving an exposition of the monster, let's build up their backstories a little bit and then slowly bring in this mysterious thing and have them react to it. And that's going to terrify the audience because they have no idea what the fuck this thing is. And even until the end, like there's little breadcrumbs, but it's not a full picture. And that's for the audience to walk out and talk about with their friends, like, what do you think this thing is? Why did it do this? And when it did this, it's intentional. And I want to give the audience that intrigue and get them maybe excited for a feature. Who knows?
And so you finish the film. Well, we'll get that. And then I mentioned the festival run. So Are you still, are you done with the festival run? You
have I have a couple festivals, but they're, I mean, other than that, it's just more like kind of just the
like, have you been doing it for like a full year at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been
doing. That's a long year, huh?
Oh, trust. This waking that I've had. Woo. Too many meals out, and oh, trust. Well, I think
stress snacking,
like waiting for the award.
You know. Stress eating and social eating, right?
Yeah, stress eating, social eating, and then drinking, and oh boy. Just. You know, I'm ready to get back on the treadmill and just think about writing again.
We do some of our best thoughts during cardio, right?
Yeah.
But then we stop running to write it down, and then it's a little difficult to start running again.
It's always tough.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad that, you know, it's had a good run, and I'm excited that people have been asking about, you know, what is this? What is that? What is this? I'm like, dude, I'm working on it right now. And I'm excited about what we're doing, like what we're developing with this thing. It's even though I kind of have already had an outline for it, it's more like now that I'm writing this thing, and it's got me excited that people even at just the sort of reacting to that level has me very stoked at what the road brings ahead or what lies ahead with Watcher. Even though I cannot call the feature Watcher because there's 500 Watchers now.
Yeah, multiple films and TV shows came out and just pulled that rug out.
From it didn't exist before either?
No. It was 2010. I was like, I got Watcher. That sounds like a dope name.
There was Watcher, The Watcher, and another Watcher.
Yeah.
In an amazingly quick succession.
Yeah, it was like...
Within a year.
Within the first notification of the film festivals in January, I think last year, it was like, oh, film festival selection, Watcher, the feature film. I was like, oh, fuck. Because I just finished post and I exported the film like, and then did all the promotion already. It's like, we had an Indiegogo called Watcher. And I was like,
I also have a line in the film where I call it the Watcher. I can go in and I can ADR, I can dub it.
Yeah, I was like, shit. But
it's funny because you're actually speaking to my soul because if I had a dollar for every filmmaker I pulled aside after a festival and said, so look, do you have to keep this title? Because I can tell you we had 6 ride shares get submitted this year. You know what I mean?
Shit. Like,
I feel so bad for everyone I like who submitted a ride share because we've had more than one ride share, I think, in. But like you gotta just have a title that it's not the 19th on IMDb.
Yeah, like, and don't add the. Like, don't try to cheat and be like The Watcher. Like, there is another 20,000 of those Watchers. It was the unfortunate.
Are you worried to say the new title because you might jinx it?
Luckily, I have a V in there, so they can't take it. But,
The Vacha. No.
Yeah. The Vacha. Yeah, like, it was nuts. Like, and then I had an unfortunate situation with a festival that another Watcher's score got mixed in with my score, and it didn't get me in the festival by accident. I was supposed to be selected, so I guess somebody's...
The score?
Yeah, he's like the judge scores or...
Scores, right. I was thinking musical scores.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like the judge scores to be an official selection, you know, how they have like, you know, placement scores. So there's 2 Watchers at this festival, mine and another one. Mine was apparently good. The other one apparently not so good. And somebody either did a human error and kind of mixed in the scores by accident. And I got the rejection letter. I was like, huh? Not because I felt like I was going to get in. And then I had an email like, this is a bummer, but, hopefully, you know, down the road, I'll come back with another one. They're like, hold up. You're supposed to be in this. They had to investigate. They're like, yeah, apparently there was a bunch of Watchers this year and your score mixed in with another one and it averaged, you know, lower, and which they kind of just didn't realize it.
It wasn't us, was it?
No, okay. No.
Because we did that once, though. I think it was with a rideshare, though, where...
Oh, crap.
What people don't know, like Film Freeway is the platform now mm-hmm. for submissions. Mm-hmm. And when you give whatever person working for the whatever dedicated staff members updating Film Freeway, clicking the official selection box or clicking the not an official selection box, and if there's 3 rideshares submitted and they're supposed to click one, if they click the wrong one, there's no error correction for that. I actually had to send the email to somebody saying,
fuck.
Yeah, sorry.
You didn't actually get in. Oh, no.
Yeah.
The nice thing is they can't review you because you can only get reviewed by an official selection. But, you know, it's an honest mistake.
Yeah, it's one of the funniest things here that happened because, like, all my friends got in this festival. And I felt like the kid looking out the window.
Oh, then they fix it?
Yeah, they fixed it. I got in. But, like, it was just like that first day seeing all the official selections. And I got in. See me in this place and this and this. And I'm like, I just felt like Bart Simpson staring out the window with a broken leg. Like, oh, God. I wish I was there, like, you know, got picked in.
And then you got in.
And then 2 days later, I was like, surprise, bitches, I'm in. But, yeah, it's funny how that, you know, that does happen.
It's tough. Which, another lesson about titles. Memorable and unique.
Yeah, make it very memorable and unique.
I'm lame because I like a long, confusing title, but I know that's really bad marketing.
Yeah, like, I tried to...
Well, you do the... you do the long, complicated title, but you start it with like one word and then a semicolon.
There you go.
And then you do your long, complicated title, right?
No. Watcher, military movie about people who need money. And they're okay, haunted.
Let's workshop that one. Yeah, let's workshop.
I probably everything for me goes back to Dr. Strangelove.
There you go.
Or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb or whatever. Brilliant. I probably just blew it, but that's close.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, to me, it's like a good title. It's like it has to stick out, it has to be strong. Again, like I thought Watcher's going to be strong, but there's people not the same. But I mean, even with the one that I'm working on right now, even this other project I'm working on right now, I am so happy that like I even looked up the trade. Like there's all the downline, like it's not there. It's not there. Cool, we got a chance.
buy that domain, baby.
Yeah, buy that domain. Go to GoDaddy.com.
Go on every social media network.
Yeah, grab every single
and grab
handle.
The at.
Yeah, I already have one for like a title that I've been working on. I'm like, got it. Stolen. You can't do it. You can't take this one, emo kid. Like, it's just like.
Very funny. Well, anything you want to, what else do we need to cover? And by the way, I'm going to add for those who don't know, like at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival when we showed Watcher and Alan came up and did the Q&A and you did it by yourself. And then after, I don't know if you know this, but Soren said to me at the mixer the next day, I think.
It was later that day.
It was later that day.
It was right across the street.
Oh, yeah. We finished with the five horror. That was so much fun for me.
Yeah. It was.
I pulled my self-indulgence moment and I said, okay, we can go a little long at the theater. I'm going to add a fifth horror film to this block.
The
really sick one that half our jury didn't like, but I don't know. I liked it. I couldn't help it. I had to put it
in. Oh, was it the like crazy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I liked that one a lot.
Wasn't that one cool?
I liked that one a lot because there was really unexpected humor in it.
Farmhouse. Yeah. Yeah.
When the guy's dragging one of them and he's like humming that dumb song, I could not stop laughing. I thought that was one of the best, like best placed humor I've ever.
It was very zany. I liked it. Like
I told
the
audience, right, that guy, that wasn't an effect. That was a circus freak.
Oh.
That's a guy with a medical condition where he can't grow muscles.
Oh my God.
So that's how it's crazy. But anyway, so I was trying to say that Soren said to me, it was so cool because she said she normally would join you for Q&As.
Yeah.
But this one, you got to have the spotlight to yourself, which I thought was very fun.
Yeah. And that rarely happens because usually I try to bring everybody in and I don't want to be like the go-to guy. Like so it wasn't just me.
Yet you did everything.
I did.
It's your film. It's your baby.
But I mean,
Those who want to watch it, go to ShermanOaksFilmFestival.com. Or ShermanOaksFF.com, and there's a link for all the Q&As from that year.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a blast, but, like, it was just, I try to bring everybody in because I know they put their part in with it wasn't just me. Like, sure, I did a lot of the work, but, I mean, I had a bunch of great support to get me through it, and Soren was a part of it. So every time I get into a festival, I let Soren know first because, you know, Soren was there since the first start of it, and it's just, it's more exposure for her, like as an actor and to show that, you know, she produced this thing too. Like she put in her resources within it. Everybody did. And I try to bring them as much exposure as I get, you know, it's not just a one man show. Like after the film festival run, it's still everybody's game.
For sure. And in spite of all the hats you wore and me joking that it was your baby. I mean, it is your baby, but your baby would not have survived without all the contributions you got from all the collaborators. And actually, like I said, it's not a short. It's not an indie short about two people having a conversation in a room. I mean, it's got a bigger cast than most indies. It's got more challenging locations than most. So, it was a big bite.
Oh, yeah.
You needed help chewing. It's a horrible metaphor.
What? A mic bite? What's it called?
What?
Mike Bites. that was before we recorded.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Never mind. Scratch that.
That was during our weed edible. apparently, there's weed edibles shaped like the piece of Evander Holyfield's ear that Mike Tyson bit off. You guys can just Google that.
Yeah. We don't have a promo code.
Yeah.
This is free advertising.
Well, like, if you want a friend to see free pack of those Mike Bites, Mike Tyson, feel free to. Thank you.
The bummer is that Tyson's probably getting a piece of the action and Evander's not.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's here his fucking ear. I'm just saying.
Man.
Just change the arrow just a little bit to make it not his
year. I smell a lawsuit, but
yeah. But no, it's been a blast with that festival. Like that, doing that interview with you was like so nerve-wracking because again, that was my first time by myself and like just you as a host.
But Jeff was gentle.
Yeah, Jeff was made everything blend in really well to the point where I could actually bring in fun tidbits that I wasn't able to talk about even in the other festivals. Like I brought in, I think we talked about the influences of Watcher, which was really cool because I briefly touched on them a little bit on the other festivals, but this one I really went like was able to go all in on it.
And at Sherman Oaks, we do a fairly long Q&A. Like we don't rush people. I think some. I mean, I assume you had some really good festival experiences, but sometimes right they'll show like a block of eight films,
maybe 2 minutes,
and yeah, like have a row of directors stand in front, like okay. Everyone just say your budget and then sit down or something like that. I've heard of these things.
Yeah, it'd be quick. You either get one question like, so did you have fun? Yes, I did. This is cool. Go to the after party. All right, cool. Socialize about that, I guess.
Painful.
Yeah, but no, it was such a blast to do. And to hear even like some of the filmmakers that were there that to walk up to talk about Watcher and then talk about their films too. It was really nice to go a little bit deeper even during the social thing, the little dinner that we had after. So it was really cool.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask you anything y'all want to throw in before we wrap this up, and then I can explain to Soren the strange sounds she's hearing from the wind outside.
I can tell it's the wind.
Yeah.
But it definitely sounds like someone is just traipsing across your room.
I'll just share it. I know the mics aren't picking it up, but there's a wall right behind me, about 4 feet behind me, and on the other side of that wall is like a 3-foot by 3-foot metal thing that hangs on the wall. Oh. So the wind's just slamming that metal into the wall next to us because a storm is a-coming.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's going to rain for like 3 days.
I heard on Jack FM, as I was driving here, that it's supposed to be the coldest storm on record for Southern California.
We're going to freeze our everything off.
That means I have to get my dog a sweater.
Oh, I mean, but Marty looks so good in sweaters.
Yeah, he does. So I'm fine with it.
Just get him a little. I'll get him a little Freddy Krueger sweater.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Doesn't he have one?
He did, but he outfitted. He's big. He's a big boy now.
He's a chonk. He's a chonky boy.
So, yeah, so the third week of February 2023. It's 2023, right? Yeah. That does not sound right to me. But, yeah, we're going to freeze.
It'll maybe sound right by about September. You're going to have to get ready for 24.
It's going to be cold and wet in Southern California. But, hey, we'll survive.
We'll get through it. We'll get through the one into rain. We'll see people drowning, but it's fine.
It's going to fuck with my tennis game, I tell you. Well, anyway.
We had plans.
I got so many plans. All right. Well, anything anyone wants to mention or you want to name like websites and social media stuff that people should follow?
Sure. You can follow me at Soren Bug on Instagram. That's the coolest place to follow me at. Sorenbug.
Yeah. And I'll make it a clickable link.
Nice. Yeah. Mine is very simple. All my social media is Alan Poe. Faux show, it's AlanPoeFoSHO. All together. I still don't know how I just like rhyming, so don't judge.
I like it. I like it a lot. And I mean, I made a point of not adding the Poe while introducing you and stuff. Oh, although yeah. I do know in the credits that we got for Sherman Oaks Film Festival, Poe was in the center of your name, but
yeah,
it's just a nickname. I think I asked you, right?
Yeah, it's a nickname from high school because I was a writer. So this very cute girl, I remember this, was just like, oh, yeah, you're a writer, huh? I'm like, yeah. She goes, I'm going to call you Alan Poe. I'm like, yeah, you are.
Oh my god! I'm a cool guy.
Yeah, I'm a cool guy. It was like she was my crush, so I was like, yeah, just nervous, but she spread it out like, oh, it's Alan. So as soon as he started saying Alan Poe, people caught on, and it just never just went away. And yeah, even in high school to like college,
at least you didn't start quoting the Raven.
No, that'd be interesting.
Kind of cool.
That'd be, yeah,
it's just cool guy.
Cool guy.
No. We're getting a negative vibe on the I don't even remember anything of of Edgar Allan Poe, but I remember being forced to read it in whatever, ninth grade, I think.
Yeah, you know, I just remember the Tall Tale Heart.
Had a very alternative education, so.
Yeah, he's a very dark dude. But yeah, it was his nickname, and from there, it just stuck, and I didn't want, like, even as a director, like, when I started doing stuff, I wanted to keep the nickname as a homage to, like, people that, you know, got me started in writing. You know, they still call me Allan Poe or Poe. So I was like, you know what, I'll just add it as a middle name, like Allan Poe Sanchez, and to have it stick there. And it has stayed in quotations.
And honestly, it probably works. It's probably going to benefit you down the road.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's an identifier, you know?
I should just do the McG thing and just go Poe.
Dang. There you go.
A Poe production.
You could make yourself Poe for show.
No, Poe for show.
Poe for show, Perdo.
Oh.
Don't do that.
Don't yeah, do that. I was about to go daddy that right now, but.
All right. Well, I will. I'll get us out of here so that we can start up again and do the four questions thing.
Oh, yeah, but for sure.
I will. What am I supposed to do now? First of all, I'm going to ask both of you, make me take your photo right after this.
Make a note.
Because on my notes, in like a massive font, it says take pic. And I didn't. And I didn't before we started recording. So now I'm, because I'm too old and I can't remember anything anymore, I knew I would forget again. So I'm counting on you young people to remember. So anyway, we're going to take a picture soon. And for those who want to learn more about this podcast or the TV series that was born from it, go to discoverindiefilm.com or on Instagram. On all social media platforms, it's at DIFWINS. I know the first like 20 people who are on the podcast, we like had a little vote for what the social media should be, and at DIFWINS1. So anyway, and that's for the podcast and the TV series that was born from it. And I believe Alan's film, Allan Poe Sanchez's film, will be in season 9, which is very fun. And I think that'll be September this year, which weirdly will be here too soon. Mm-hmm. This is just February we're recording, and I think it's going to come out in April. Mm. And so, passage of time. So anyway, that's about Discovery Indie Film. And by the way, be nice, like, subscribe, write a nice review.
Share with a friend.
Even go on a Prime Video app on a nice big TV. Don't watch movies on your phone unless you're like a certain age and that seems normal to you. I don't want to judge. But open up the Prime Video app, watch, rent the show, rent Discover Indie Film, and then give it 5 stars. If you don't give it 5 stars, I'll hunt you down. Anyway, and we talked about how Watcher was at Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that festival every November, and you can go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. The sister festival is called Film Invasion Los Angeles, and we hold it every June. And you can learn more at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And yeah, we mentioned TV High in the beginning. Watch TV High, TVHI.com. Did I mention it's $4.20 a month to subscribe? If you do it at watchhightv.com. If you get it on one of the app stores, you know, they don't allow a cool number like $4.20. They make us charge $4.99. So
nerds.
Right? They should let us, give us freedom, but I'm not going to complain. And I think that's all I have to say. So Soren McVeigh. Allan Poe Sanchez? I'm not good at that. Allan Sanchez.
There we go.
Sorry, I'm a great.
Either way.
So, I tried to do the Poe.
You could do that. You could do
but it made me trip up.
You could do the one song. You could call me Al.
Hey, that's from my era.
There you go.
That came out when I was a senior in high school. And you guys were not born. So anyway, I will thank you both for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you everyone for listening.